a special live multimedia interactive flashpoint election crimes bulletin, Jim Crow in the mailbox, blocking voters of color. I'm Dennis Bernstein with Greg Palast, and welcome to this special edition of Flashpoints with Greg Palast. This is a podcast that has to do everything to do with how to stop the theft of this election, and a special welcome to those who are going to join us on Facebook Live. This is our maiden voyage, and we are happy to be here with you. Please take this moment to share. Hit that share button right now. Make sure you share us with the world. We'd love to hear you. Meanwhile, let me tell you about what's happening today. Tonight, we have two very special guests, along with our good friend Greg Palast, Reverend Lennox Yearwood. He's the founder and president of the Hip Hop Caucus. He's a public advocate, the legend, and also with the public advocate and legendary Ralph Nader. Again, I'm Dennis Bernstein with Greg Palast, and this is a special edition of the Flashpoints Election Crimes Bulletin, which we have been doing to protect your vote since 2016. Greg, welcome. And in one moment, we're going to bring in the good Reverend. How are you doing today?
Today is it's an extraordinary day. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. I hope the world can hear you.
Yes. Well, of course, we just had the arrest of Steve Bannon. And while many of us may be cheering that Bannon has been removed, we'll talk about that. The reason is that he crossed Trump. He testified against Roger Stone in federal court. And so they were waiting to get him.
All right. Well, Greg, let's talk a little bit about what we're here for. And let's welcome back into the broadcast, Reverend Lennox Yearwood. Reverend, you're a legend in my name, and the work you've been doing fighting for the vote over all these many years has been crucial. I want to get your first hit. We're watching a frontal steal of the election process. We've got a new postal master who has decided to collect the mailboxes and the tallying machines. Your thoughts of what we're seeing now?
Well, it's good to see you as well, and Greg, and talk with you. This moment is a moment when we're seeing what happens usually to Black and Indigenous and people of color, but it's happening to everybody. Normally, Black people have been put in a position of being used with voter suppression in a way that they can discount their votes. And that happens with people of color and Indigenous communities as well. This year, what we're seeing is that, unfortunately, a lot of our white brothers and sisters have now joined the charade of trying to count how many bubbles are in a soap bar, or how many marbles are in the jar. We're now seeing literally the entire country being tossed into a place where their votes will not matter. And so I think that people are outraged. They're not used to feeling this way when polling places are being moved, mailboxes are being thrown away. They're not used to being in a situation when they're told that police officers will be standing guard to intimidate them so that those who are returning citizens, aka ex-felons, can be in a position. So now, this is the time when you now see a lot more people are alarmed by what's going on, because they are now feeling what it feels like to be disenfranchised. And when they don't like it. We didn't like it as Black people or brown people. We don't like it, but we've seen it for literally 50 to 100 years. But now a lot of our folks in the movement are now seeing what it feels like to be disenfranchised.
There's some concern, Reverend, that Trump isn't going to give it up easy, and that we're going to see a second, more violent battle after the votes are cast. Are you concerned that this could go to even a more ugly place?
Most definitely. We have a situation here where capitalism is and our economy and our entire structure of democracy is on the line. And there are those who would rather be on a suicidal mission for democracy and just literally themselves than literally have this country continue. They are worried that their positions of how they've made so much money on the issues of climate change and on the extractive measures of the fossil fuel industry. They're worried that their ideas of what it means to have black and brown people used to populate their private prisons. They're worried that the food that they can just give to people that could be just deregulated. And what could happen? They realize that a lot of people are waking up, and they understand that if it changes now, that not only just Republicans, but also Democrats are realizing that the status quo is changing. And so this is a historic moment. So I think that they're going to do everything they can. And unfortunately, Dennis, that even means they may kill for it. If it comes down to that, they will do everything. And then let that sink in. They will do everything they can to hold on to power.
You are listening to a special edition of the Flashpoint Election Crimes Bulletin. My name is Dennis Bernstein, and also joining us is Greg Palast. He's got an important new book, How Trump Stole 2020. Now, it's really a book about how to try and prevent Trump from stealing 2020. Let me bring you into the dialogue, Greg. Join us.
Yes. Well, I would say yes. The book, How Trump Stole 2020, it's not a prediction. It's a warning that if we don't take action, that's what's going to happen. And the reason I say Trump stole 2020 is already taken actions which have stolen it, but we can steal it back. That is, we can bust the burglary. And I'm really particularly happy to be here with Reverend Yearwood, who I wanted to join us, because he's right. Suddenly, guess what? White people are being, especially young people, are being treated as if they turned black, and they're finding out what it is to run through an obstacle course to cast a vote or have it counted. So here's one thing we have to learn. 1 in 5 mail-in ballots has been thrown in the garbage. Historically, that's not even heading into this year with the mailboxes being carted off in trucks. 22%, according to MIT. So what do we do about this? We have to steal it back. That is, we have to be very careful about how we vote. We have to check your registration. 16.7 million people, Dennis, have been removed from the voter rolls. Now, African Americans know this because they are the main targets of this mass purge operation. You've had, for example, we found in How Trump Stole 2020, I discuss how 340,134 voters, and we know this exactly, we went through each of their names, were illegally removed from the voter rolls. And what was their crime? Voting while black. This is going to, now that's how they stole the governorship of Georgia in 2018. That was the test run for 2020. Mm-hmm. And Reverend Yearwood knows this. By the way, this is Greg Palast speaking. If you're listening to Flashpoints on KPFA or the other affiliates that are listening on Flashpoints, you can also watch us on Facebook Live at Greg Palast Investigates or other sites. And you'll get to see Reverend Yearwood and myself, Greg Palast, with Dennis Bernstein. Please, if you're on Facebook, share this. This is really important. Hit that share button. But Dennis, I want to hit one thing real quick, and then I'll turn it back to Reverend Yearwood. And by the way, stay tuned, because we're going to have the great Ralph Nader joining us shortly. Stay tuned there. But Dennis, you worried about what's going to happen in November if it's going to turn ugly. Yes. In fact, while many of us are kind of celebrating the arrest of Steve Bannon, the trickster who had his organization build the wall. And now a lot of people know from my book that I've been investigating his lawyer, Kris Kobach, for years. Kris Kobach created this organization, We Build the Wall, to basically shake down the rubes, the schmucks who don't realize that you send in your $50 and they build about 4 inches of a wall. Okay, so who's going to be stopped by this wall? Well, people who don't know how to drive, or people who have never heard of airplanes, and they have this wall in the middle of the desert. But the main thing is, it's a way for Steve Bannon to stick money in his pocket. But here's the trick. So why was he busted? Why would Trump do that? Because He was the main witness against Roger Stone. And Trump needs Roger Stone. Let's remember what Roger Stone did in 2000. He led a riot of consultants in Gucci loafers. It was called the Gucci Riot, which stopped the count in Florida. Now, remember, and again, this is in the book, but George Bush won the presidency of the United States by just 537 ballots in the state of Florida. And part of that was that Roger Stone led a riot in Miami to stop the count of the votes in Miami, which is a Democratic city. So there are a lot of votes that were never counted. And they were able to stop the count by basically threatening the safety of the people counting the votes. If they do that again, get ready for that. They're going to start saying all this stuff about fraudulent voters, Dennis. You know what that's about? That's about laying the groundwork to say there's 50,000 illegal votes from Venezuela, mail-in votes from Venezuela in that building at the Miami-Dade County offices where they're counting it. They're stealing the election. What's going to happen? Molotov cocktails, Proud Boys, jerks in Hawaiian shirts, banging on the windows, smashing windows. You're going to see post office on fire. I guarantee you. And that's one of the main things that Roger Stone has to do. So they let him out of prison, but they also have to punish the guy that put him into prison, Steve Bannon, who's part of that. So look out for serious violence. If Trump is down in the polling and in the exit polling, they're going to try to stop the count of the vote. If they stop the count of the vote, no candidate will receive 270 electoral votes in the Electoral College. Then under Article 12 of the Constitution, it goes to the House of Representatives. No, it's not up to Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats. Each state gets a single vote, Dennis. Reverend, each state gets one vote. That means that Trump will win about 30-20 constitutionally. Let me put that in air quotes for those who aren't watching. Constitutionally, he'll be reelected, not by the voters, but by the Article 12 trickery and the violence that they're planning. And I'm telling you, they're planning the violence.
That's where I'd love to pick it up, Greg, and I bring the Rev back into the discussion. We have seen, Reverend Ira, the Democrats have been light and timid about fighting for that vote. We saw Gore give it up in 2000. They didn't fight the battle. Your thoughts on how to stiffen up and strengthen the courage of the Democrats who aren't yet ready for this fight, if today's hearings with the postmaster are any witness, because this guy essentially said, I'm not changing nothing. I'm not putting back those machines. And all the Democrats and the Republicans, well, they accepted it, but the Dems didn't have much to say about it. Said, oh, thank you. So you're not going to do any more. Your thoughts on that? Giving up the vote so easily.
Yeah, no, I think that one of the things that Greg just said, I think it's so important, is that we're not hearing the argument and what's being laid out and the reality. I think that Democrats, those, again, who want to just believe in this administration's better side, they're not taking seriously what they see before them. Every single breadcrumb that is being laid out by this administration has led us to show that I would be surprised, actually, if they don't do everything to steal this election. I mean, they've said, in other words, they've done everything. They bought the mask. They bought the gun. They got the note for the bank. They've done everything. They've gone into the bank. I would assume they're going to be a bank robber. I would assume that the last thing they're going to do is actually go to walk out the bank or put money into the bank. They've done everything that looks like, sounds like, acts like someone who is going to steal this election. They look like it's like they're about to do in democracy. And so I'm surprised that in this convention that we just saw, that wasn't front and center. I think, President Obama had a little bit of his speech was kind of somewhere in line. I mean, there were bits and pieces of his conversation where he was warning about that. And I mean, I was great. People were saying that's a dark Obama, but that was where we need to be. it seems like too many times Democrats are playing checkers while their adversary on the other side is playing chess. And it just seems like they're a step behind, as though they're waiting for something to happen, then to react. I just want to say this about Roger Stone, for example. Roger Stone, as Greg mentioned, was someone who received seven federal counts and received literally, to show you, if no jail time, very, very little jail time, and what was put forth. And for many people of color, when we see that as an example, we see Roger Stone walking away. But on the other hand, we see people like Khalif Browder in New York, who literally couldn't afford bail money, was accused of stealing a backpack, and in his situation was in jail for 3 years in Rikers. And when he came out, was so damaged, he committed suicide. And so you have a situation here where people will see on and on and on two types of justice, and they now seeing two types of democracy. I really want to repeat again that this democracy that we are seeing now in 2020 is the exact same democracy that Black people saw in 1955. It's the exact same voter suppression that we saw in 1920. We saw that. So what we're seeing now is something that we're used to.
You are listening to a special edition of the Election Crimes Bulletin on Flashpoints. I'm Dennis Bernstein with Greg Palast. This is also live on Facebook. Hit the click. Join us there. Tell your friends. Share this broadcast. This show, the Election Crimes Bulletin, was begun in 2016 with Greg Palast, fighting for the vote. Then we continue the work here in 2020. Greg has a brand new book, which is incredibly important, How Trump Stole 2020. And we are sharing this with you. Later on in the broadcast, we'll also be joined by Ralph Nader. We don't want you to miss that as well. And then there'll be a little afterlife on Facebook Live for those of you who want to interact directly with Greg. But Reverend, what does the dialogue have to be now? We've seen a lot of people in the streets. There are a lot of people who are motivated, a lot more. It seems to be a lot more people know what the situation is in terms of the way Black and brown people have been slaughtered for so many years. But how do you channel that? How do you put that into practice in the face of what we know is coming right at us? We're standing on the tracks and it's coming right at us like a train.
Yeah. So for those who are listening, I am the president of the Hip Hop Caucus, and that is an organization that works with young people across this country, predominantly 18 to 35. I'm still around. I can say that I have fun being with the young people. They check my health care every day, make sure I'm up to date, and make sure I'm good to go. But it's an awesome organization that's predominantly Black and Indigenous people of color. It also has white, it's male, it's female, straight, gay, theist, atheist. It's an amazing organization that uses one's cultural expression to shape one's political experience. And so in that, what they have seen for them, is they've seen two sides of America. They've seen, most of when they were growing up, Barack Obama. And now they see Donald Trump. It's important that they, as young people, were not afraid to challenge President Obama when it came to the issue of climate change. They were willing to be arrested during the Keystone XL pipeline. They were willing to stand up in Standing Rock. They were also willing to fight when Eric Garner or Michael Brown or Sandra Bland. And so they were willing to make their voices heard then. And so I think that now what you're asking is that how do we then take that? What's important is that they were not afraid to stand up for what was right, even though those who were in power were supposed to be on their side. It's easier now to some degree because it's probably more Black and white. The next step, though, Dennis, is this. Our job is to help that generation to understand the importance of policy and legislation. That is the missing link. A lot of them don't see that connection. And what we're trying to tell them is that demonstration without legislation leads to frustration. And so we're trying to get them to understand that this electoral part of this process is as important as the protest part of what they're doing in the streets.
All right, let's bring Greg Palast back into this discussion, because his book is all about the fight to protect your vote and how to fight this on many levels. So, Greg, maybe you want to give us a bit of a rundown in terms of the election protection kit.
Okay, very clearly. By the way, at the end of the book, How Trump Stole 2020, but also at gregpalast.com, if you don't want to get the book, is what I call the ballot condom for safe voting. No, you don't wrap it around your ballot, but you do follow the seven steps. And the first thing is to check your registration. And I don't care if you've been voting at the same place for 20 years. Check your registration online. Every secretary of state, every county board of elections has registration rolls online. Check yours. You know, I was in Georgia with, I was in Georgia with Martin Luther King's 92-year-old cousin, who was told, you can't vote here anymore.
You need it. You have to have it.
Sorry. There was some glitch here. Anyway, his 92-year-old cousin, Martin Luther King, had been voting at the same voting station for 50 years. They threw her out. They said, you're no longer registered here. So they can take away Martin Luther King's 92-year-old cousin. They can throw her out of the voting station. They can get rid of you, too. Understand, 16.7 million people have lost their vote. Now, here's the other problem. If they've purged you, you ain't getting no mail-in ballot. It's real simple. If the ballot hasn't been mailed out to you, you can't mail it back in. That's pretty clear. Now, here's the other problem. See, for the first time, as the Reverend said, white people are finding out that it's difficult to vote by mail. This has been happening in the African-American community, in communities of color, for years. Do you know that the post office loses up to 20% of all mass mailings into urban areas and big apartment buildings? So, you know, again, we don't have a functioning post office for people of color in urban areas and low-income areas. This didn't just start now. It's just that finally they're taking away the mailboxes and the postal sorting centers, which affect the suburban areas. So welcome, white people, to voting like a black person. They're not going to make it easy for you. It's an obstacle course. So you better, number one, is ask for your mail-in vote at least 2 months early. If it's not there for within 3 weeks of the election, here's what you're going to have to do. You're going to have to go into the county board of elections and pick up your ballot. I know that's not easy. I know it's not wonderfully safe. Bring gloves and masks, etc. But that's what you got to do. You're going to have to save your vote. I just looked at, in Wisconsin, in the Democratic primary, 23,000 mail-in ballots were disqualified in the Democratic primary. In the general, we can expect at that rate about 70,000 ballots to be disqualified. For all kinds of cockamamie reasons. Like in Wisconsin, you have to have a witness signature. If you're a student, forget about, you're going to have to send in, by the way, a photocopy of your ID. But if you're a student, you can't send in that University of Wisconsin ID. You have to have a special ID. 50,000 African Americans in Milwaukee were disenfranchised by the law requiring you to include your photo ID in with your mail-in ballot, because 50,000 African-Americans in the Milwaukee area don't have driver's licenses. Why should they? They don't have cars. They live in apartment buildings. They use public transport. But what's happening is that the disqualification of votes, when it was just happening in Milwaukee, which happened in 2016, no one cared because it was African-Americans. Now it's you. So let me tell you something. Once again, 23,000 votes were disqualified in the Democratic primary in Wisconsin because of all kinds of cockamamie reasons, from not having your ID included, not having witness signature. Many states require witness signatures. Check your rules. But what's happening is, understand, 23,000 votes is bigger than Donald Trump's margin of victory in 2016. They know they can't win Wisconsin if they elect the voters vote. So they're taking the tricks of 2016 and they're amplifying them. In fact, today as we speak, the Republican Party has gone to court to demand the removal of 153,000 voters from the voter rolls of Wisconsin. That's seven times Trump's victory margin in Wisconsin. They're really intent on putting their thumb on the scale. And let me tell you that the number of people, if you are African-American, according to the U.S. Civil Rights Commission that analyzed this, the chance your ballot will be challenged and rejected is 900% higher if you're black than if you're white. And that's the reality. We have Jim Crow with a bullet this year, and it may be with actual bullets on Election Day.
And thank you, Greg Palast. And you mentioned Wisconsin, Madison. We've seen how the politicians, the right-wing politicians there, are willing to force people into the streets after they've disappeared the polling places. We now know because they forced people into the streets and they made it very difficult to vote, dozens of people got sick. Several died from trying to express their right to vote. So I'm concerned. I'm somebody who's over 70, and I know some of the struggles that are going on. And we know that older people tend to vote more than younger people. So this process has definitely put the older generation at stake. They have risked our lives to force this kind of, to undermine this kind of policy. Before we let you go, Reverend, you want to talk about some final thoughts about where you're going to go from here, what you're looking for, what your plans are.
Yeah, I just wanted to, I guess, echo something that Greg mentioned. Just wanted to say some of the numbers. In the last election, just 3% of whites said that they were told that they weren't eligible for the election. That was compared to 9% of black and 9% of Hispanic respondents who indicated that during the last election that someone, them or in the household, were told they lacked the proper identification to vote. 10% of black respondents and 11% of Hispanic respondents reported that they were incorrectly told they weren't listed on voter rolls, as opposed to 5% of white respondents. So we're seeing this over and over again, that there is an attack on black, on Latinx, and indigenous people of color voting. And this is very serious. And I'll say this to you, Dennis. I want to say this, you know, at Hip Hop Caucus, we have our Respect My Vote campaign, and you can go there. But let me say this to be very clear. We are tired of being disenfranchised. We are dying. We are dying. We're dying. This next week represents 15 years of Hurricane Katrina. We're dying. We're dying in the streets with George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. We're dying. We're dying in the prisons. We're dying in alarming rates because of COVID. We're dying. Our mothers are dying. Our fathers are dying. Our grandparents are dying. And you have the audacity for the one thing that we can correct that madness is for us to vote, for us to cast our ballot to make our lives a little better. And even in that, you want to stand in front of us to take that away. That can't happen anymore. We have got to fight like we have to fight like our lives depend on it, because we're dying. And so, Dennis, I thank you so much for having me. But know this, we're at a point now where this is our lunch counter moment for the 21st century. And we got to stand up and make sure that whatever comes, hell or high water, we're going to vote. And we're going to vote, and we're going to vote to make sure that our voice is heard. So thank you so much. Good to see you, Dennis. Good to see you, Greg. And just know that Hip Hop Caucus, we're going to fight. We got no other choice but to fight, because we're dying.
Well, I want to thank you. We are grateful that you could join us today, Reverend Lennox Yearwood, founder and president of the Hip Hop Caucus. Extraordinary group. Please check them out. What's the best way to check it out?
Just go to hiphopcaucus.org, or for the voting, go to respectmyvote.com.
Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. We hope we can continue this dialogue.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Power to the people and to the voters. You Most are time. Listening to a special edition of the Election Crimes Bulletin, Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. I'm here with Greg Palast. He's got a brand new vote, which is an election protection manual, how Trump stole 2020. He didn't do it yet. And the battle is on. I want to tell you that we're going to continue this dialogue. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by the legendary Ralph Nader, who has a lot to say about protecting your vote. So short break. We'll be right back. We are back. Dennis Bernstein here with Greg Palast. We want to tell you this is a simulcast. This is our first interactive Flashpoints election protection bulletin with the inspiration of Greg Palast, who said I could do it. I didn't think I could. Greg is there dealing on the other side. Whatever we have to do to get this on, I want to tell you that his book is important. It is an important book in this struggle to protect the vote. We got to work on a lot of different levels, Greg, don't we? Before we bring Ralph in, this is a multi-level battle, if you will.
Well, what I would like to do is make sure that people who are listening in hit their share button. If you're on Facebook, if you want to see us, if you're listening on radio, you can go to Greg Palast Investigates, one of the hosts of the of this Facebook Live simulcast. So you can actually take a look at my hat. So you'll know for sure that I'm an investigative reporter because I've got that fedora, you know. But most important, I want you to hit the share button because I want you to bring in people who normally don't get Flashpoints and the Election Crimes Bulletin. Let all your friends know. Let all your friends on Facebook know. Hit that share button. Let's get the word out. This is important. This is life or death. This is a meeting. We're having a national virtual meeting right now on how to steal back this election, bust the burglary. It's really important. And, you know, once again, we were just with the great Reverend Yearwood, head of the Hip Hop Caucus. And, you know, I want to emphasize again, I just was looking at a study by MIT, another study, which said whose absentee ballot is not counted. Well, if you're Hispanic, the chance your absentee ballot will be challenged and rejected is 300% higher than if you're white. If you're black, 250%. And interestingly, the most vulnerable group of all are Asian Americans. They're the ones who have their ballots challenged more than anyone, more than 300% more often than white folk. Understand, when you mail in your ballot, now, we have to mail in your ballot. I'm not against mailing in your ballot. But you have to understand how risky it is. Because some schmuck in a Hawaiian shirt can say, I don't like that signature. We had 141,000 ballots in 2016 that were mailed in that were not counted because someone challenged those ballots, challenged the signature. Over 100,000 people lost their vote because of postage due. And then literally a couple million people lost their mail-in vote because it never got to them. And believe me, if you've moved even your apartment within your building, you're a student who's moved within your dorm, re-register right now. Go online and protect it. Because remember, they're going to have 50,000 volunteers for Trump. People are worried that this is some type of intimidation army, but I haven't seen voters who would be intimidated. I was with African-American voters in Dayton waiting 5 hours in line. They're not going to be intimidated by these jerks. What I am concerned about is that their ballots will be challenged by these jerks. Like I said, 1 in 5 mail-in ballots is not counted. About 1 in 9 of those are challenged after they've been mailed in. And unfortunately, Dennis, the Democratic Party has already established the precedent of challenging mail-in votes. In New York, the Democratic Party in the Maloney-Patel race challenged 24,000 ballots, demanded that they not be counted for technical reasons. The main reason, 12,000 votes were excluded because people mailed in their ballots as Mario Cuomo and the governor and Bill de Blasio told them to. But then once they mailed in their ballots, Cuomo and de Blasio said, gotcha, we're not going to count those ballots. They challenged them in courts because, are you ready for this? You have to have your ballot postmarked to have it counted. And in New York, they pre-stamped the mail-in ballots. The post office doesn't postmark pre-stamped mail. So literally, you send in your mail-in ballot, must be postmarked to be counted, but they don't postmark them. Finally, I will say that a postmaster, an honest postmaster, started postmarking some of the ballots, but those that weren't postmarked, about half of them, the courts threw out, and the victory of the Justice Democrat was overturned in favor of the party-favored Democrat, Carol Maloney. And if the Democrats are doing this, imagine what the Republicans are going to do challenging your vote. So am I saying don't mail in your vote? No, just make sure that you follow every single rule. Don't put a piece of tape on it. The Democrats challenged every ballot that had a piece of scotch tape to seal the envelope. I didn't know that scotch tape disqualified you as an American citizen, but apparently it does to the Democratic Party. But that ain't nothing compared to the challenges that are going to be mounted by the GOP. So be very careful filling out your ballot. And if you're healthy and young, you're going to volunteer, my friends. You're going to volunteer to be a poll watcher and a watcher that stays through that night and the next day 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 when they're opening up those mail-in ballots and counting them. It's going to be at least a two-week process. You got to be there.
All right. That's Greg Palast. I'm Dennis Bernstein, and I want to tell you that our next guest is Ralph Nader. For those of you who have been living on another planet for many years, let me tell you a little bit about Ralph Nader. He is a legendary consumer advocate, lawyer, author. In his career as consumer advocate, he founded many organizations, including the Center for Study of Responsive Law, the Public Interest Research Group, the Center for Auto Safety, Public Citizen. It goes on. Ralph Nader, it is good to have you with us. Can I get your initial response to this overt attempt to shut down the post office and undermine the vote? Are you surprised?
No, I'm not surprised, but I'm surprised that in recent years, when this type of behavior came to greater visibility, that the obstruction of voting isn't a serious federal crime with monetary penalties and prison terms. You have a president who openly goes on national television and urges his henchmen at the post office to obstruct the delivery of votes and allows them to take away sorting machines, break them up, stop overtime, shortchange the post office, and set up the system where people will wonder whether if they vote 2 weeks before and they put it in the mail, it'll get to the destination in time. And people will often say, well, I'm not going to take the trouble of that. All this should be a crime. Obstructing voting is the essential constitutional level crime, period. And the Democrats, who moan and groan about Trump, have yet to make an effort in Congress to make it a serious crime with injunctive relief and all the rest of what the law can muster to stop the rogue president, so-called, in the White House, dangerous, decadent, disgusting, disgraceful Donald Trump from doing what he openly says. This is not a furtive Richard Nixon, you know, who hid his Watergate stuff behind a shield. These people are openly saying that's what they can do. And 2 days of hearings by the House of Representatives are not enough with the Postmaster General DeJoy up there, you know, he'll play rope-a-dope. They'll shout and pound the desk and, you know, say you should quit and all. But they should impeach him. That's an impeachable offense, and he is a high officer under the Constitution. They should immediately impeach him and throw it to the Republicans in the House and say, okay, defend this guy on national television before an institution has 91% support, the highest agency in the federal government in terms of popular support, 91%, which includes a lot of Republicans, especially in rural areas. That's the way Nancy Pelosi should raise this to the serious gravity. How many elections do they have to have stolen by the Republicans for them to go to the highest level of law enforcement and indictment? So that's one. The second, all the details that Greg puts in his book shows that this book, How Trump Stole 2020, is not just a book to read. It's a book to use. Because you basically, if you're not familiar with mail-in ballots, or if you haven't voted before, you got to train yourself. You got to look at the forms well before you fill them out to see what the pitfalls are. It's not anywhere near as difficult as, you know, learning how to play bridge or whatever. But you do have to spend a few minutes well before the election. And Greg has a website that can show you step by step, and I'm sure he's given it or he will give it in a few minutes. So then you get into a position where, as Dennis pointed out and the Reverend pointed out, you got to take the people who are obstructing you, the Republicans in this case, from voting personally. That's why people stood in line for 6-7 hours in the recent Wisconsin primary in Milwaukee. They were determined that the state Republican-dominated legislature and a ridiculous Supreme Court decision was not going to block them from voting. So there's a determination I've never seen before among a lot of voters saying, you dare obstruct me from voting? I'll show you. You're not going to discourage me. You're not going to wait me out. I'm going to vote. Either going to vote in person or I'm going to vote absentee or by mail ballot. And then what we should do is ask some of these mega billionaires like Jeff Bezos, who owns the Washington Post, that's very critical of Trump. He's increased his wealth by $47 billion since March 1. Just imagine, 6 months or so, okay? And he's up to $189 billion already. You ask three or four of these guys who are undertaxed and not being required to make any sacrifice to pay for these ballot boxes all over the neighborhoods so people can put them in these secure boxes and people can collect them and take them to the election precincts. That's another way to do it. But even more is Mitch McConnell, Moscow Mitch, they're called, you call him, because he obstructs election security legislation from domestic and foreign interference. That's why they call him Moscow Mitch. He hates it, but it fits. He's blocking a $4 billion funding of the states, which the House of Representatives has already passed, to pay for improved election security and procedures, counting, and all the rest. And that's chump change for people like Mark Zuckerberg and Tim Cook of Apple and Jeff Bezos and the head of Google and the head of Microsoft, et cetera. So we ought to make a demand that, hey, you guys are going down the polls. People think you're greedy, avoid taxes, you're monopolies, you guys, you know, you exploit Chinese workers like crazy building iPhones. Look patriotic. People think you're making a patriotic move here and just pay in. Actually, they can pay $4 billion to the state governments and get a deduction, a tax deduction. And it's perfectly legal for the state governments to take private money for these purposes, as long as they're for public purposes without any strings attached. But the real solution, my friends, to get rid of all these spiderweb trapdoor complex obstructions of the simple act of voting is to make voting a legal duty. At Australia, voting is a civic duty by law. You have to vote. You can get out of it if you happen to be abroad or you happen to be sick. But they come in at 96% turnout. No politicians have to spend any money begging people to turn out and vote. 96-97% turnout. And we're lucky if we get 63% turnout in a presidential race, and it's much less in a congressional off-year race. So let's keep the big solution in mind here. And as long as people can write in their vote, vote for the candidates of their choice, or vote for binding none of the above, that takes care of the civil liberties problem. In America right now, you cannot go and vote no to everybody. You have to vote yes to somebody. And that's not right. You need the right to register a no confidence vote. And I'll bet you that'll come in 85% support. I know none of the above comes in at 90% support. So that's the overall future reform. In the meantime, check out Greg Palast's websites and ask the Democratic National Committee and the various Democratic committees at the state level why they don't get a book like this, which has good cartoons and graphics by Ted Rall, and that's comic relief that's important in the middle of the book. Why they don't buy it in bulk? Seven Stories Press told me that if you buy two,
I wanted to jump in. That's a suggestion. You know, Bezos, didn't he say something like he's going to give away half his wealth in the next 20 years or something like that? How much would it cost for him to buy a book for everybody over 18? That's not a bad idea, right?
You're right, and he knows how to deliver it, doesn't he? They know how to deliver books, don't they?
Cheaply.
I think that Seven Stories Press, anyone who orders 250 copies or more of this paperback can get a discount down to $5 a book plus shipping, which is pretty good. So if you got a circle, if you're a member of a service club, if you're a member of a political club, if you're a member of Indivisible or Our Revolution or Move On, whatever, this is the book to have.
That's Ralph Nader. He's the guest to have. My name is Dennis Bernstein. I'm with Greg Palast. This is a special interactive edition of our Flashpoints Election Crimes Bulletin, which we've been doing since 2016, really back to 2000, when I began to work with Greg, when he called the shots on the stealing of the 2000 election. I want to give Greg a chance to ask you a question, Ralph.
Okay. By the way, thank you for that big up on the book, How Trump Stole 2020. And yes, we'll have it, gregpalast.com. The purge list, which we have blasted out with our lawyers from these GOP states like Ohio and Georgia. You can see if you've been purged from the voter rolls, and then you can re-register. Very important. And I want to ask Ralph a very difficult question. Given Roger Stone out of prison and on the loose, and the Boogaloo Boys and the Proud Boys, what happens when they use violence to stop the vote count? What should be the reaction? What do we do to prepare for it? What do we do to react for it if they use violence to stop the vote count?
Well, there are a lot of tools. One, you got to alert the FBI here. You got to alert the local versions of the FBI and the attorney generals. You got to put them on notice that this may happen. You got to go to the courts and get injunctions, which are enforceable by the decrees. And you can try to anticipate it, Greg, by having people at the polls. Sojourners, Jim Wallace told me weeks ago that they are going into the swing states. They're having a lawyer and a clergy person at as many precincts to deal with the intimidation. But you got to learn from Florida in the year 2000. The party that has the most energy and the most brazenness wins. And the Democrats didn't have it. The Republicans had it. So you got to do that. And as you know, Greg, there are a lot of good groups on the ground fighting the fight that you want to see to get people able to vote, willing to vote, filling out the forms right, learning how to avoid things like voter purges coming back. A lot of, it's not just the ACLU. There are lawyer groups, there are other groups all over the country, and you need to find out the names. I'm sure you've got those names on your website, yes, which you give five times clearly, Greg.
Yes, okay, this is Greg Pals. Again, at gregpals.com, we'll have a lot of the rules for each of the states or places where you can go to get the rules, because voting by mail ain't so easy unless you're on the West Coast. In eight states, you're going to have a witness signature. In Alabama, you're going to need an affidavit notarized by, you're going to have a notary to get your absentee ballot counted. So it's like a poll tax, but I'm sorry, that's just what you're going to have to do. Plus, there's going to be a couple of weeks of counting, so we need more than people volunteering as poll workers for the day. If you're young and healthy, volunteer for the 2 weeks of the mail-in count. And please follow every crazy rule when filling out that mail-in ballot. And of course, let's be ready for the violence that's going to come. And we can't react to the violence with violence. We have to react to the violence with a kind of stern resolve. So thank you very much, Ralph Nader. And those who are listening, please hit the share button on your Facebook page. If you're on the Facebook page, if you're listening, go on to Facebook. We've gone to Facebook Live simulcast with the KPFA and affiliates and other radio station affiliates listening to Flashpoints, because we think it's important to get this word across nationally for those people who don't have this broadcast signal. This Facebook Live will be kept up at the Greg Palast Investigates. It's not going away, so you can tell people, if you thought this is informative, to go and check it out. And again, hit that share button. This is Greg Palast reporting with Dennis Bernstein, and we're here joined by the legendary and thoughtful Ralph Nader.
I wanted to ask Ralph, Greg, Ralph, I'd love you to respond to this. We saw this weak-kneed hearing held by the Democrats today, who didn't seem to understand what a real question sounds like. Well, what kind of questions would you go after the phony postmaster general? What would you want to ask him? What did he need to be confronted on?
Well, first he's got to deliver post office by post office information about where these sorting machines were taken. Were they wrecked? If they were, that's destruction of federal property, which is a first-class felony and prosecutable. Because, you know, a few days ago he said, oh, we're not going to do it anymore. We'll do our cuts with the Postal Service after the election. That's because he's already done a lot of wreckage in post offices all over the country. Ways that, if you're not knowledgeable about postal operations, have really wrecked the system in terms of meeting standards of time delivery, et cetera. And people already are, waiting 5, 6, 7 days just for first-class mail to arrive. So that he has to deliver. They should subpoena him. This business of asking. Congress has powerful subpoena power. You defy a subpoena, you can be impeached. Nixon was impeached because he defied one subpoena in the Watergate. Trump has defied over 100 subpoenas by Congress. That is a serious constitutional violation, impeachable offense. That goes right to the core of the Congress information gathering function, which the founding fathers said was critical to all other authorities of the Congress. They have to know. They have to find out. So that's one. You subpoena the information with an immediate due date. Otherwise, you're impeached, period. The second is you gotta when you cross-examine anybody like this guy, he's under oath. You got to ask him the questions that he's going to lie about so he can be exposed to a perjury account, which is no small matter for a mega millionaire like DeJoy, who likes the good life and likes to give cash money to politicians like Trump. So you set him up for perjury charges under subpoena. But just sit there asking a question. Each member has 5 minutes, and they spend 4 minutes. DeJoy is just laughing under his breath. And so the other thing is get the labor unions up there. Get the people who, the small businesses who rely on the Postal Service, and they don't like delayed shipments. Get the people who are not getting their medicines in time. There's a report where people are waiting days to get their medicines, critical medicines for their cancer, for their emphysema, for their high blood pressure. Get them there. In other words, the House has got to come back and go to work. They've been AWOL. What is this? This is a national crisis of multiple dimensions, and they're on their August vacation. They know how to do social distance and all that. They can follow all the rules because they got all the authority and the money to do it, to protect themselves. They should have these hearings in the morning, in the afternoon, at night, on all these issues. Instead, their favorite vacation is not to be disturbed. A House that's AWOL. Now, the Senate is beyond the pale. It's, you know, Mitch McConnell controlled, Wall Street controlled, Trump controlled. They're going to go down in history with a stigma that cannot be exaggerated. Their cowardliness, allowing Trump to turn our country into an increasingly authoritarian dictatorial regime where the White House seizes the constitutional power of the purse and taxing that Congress only has, the war declaring power only Congress has. He is creating the very monarchical White House that the founding fathers feared the most. They didn't want another King George III. That's why they gave the power to Congress, which doesn't seem to want to use it. So you just, and then you bring the people that DeJoy put in place when they fired the more career high officials of the Postal Service, and you run them through the ringer. That's what you got to do. You got to put in a day's work.
Ralph, we're going to have to leave it right there. That's Ralph Nader. I'm Dennis Bernstein. Ralph, we thank you so much for joining us.